Blog Talk Radio.
Music right there. It's very introspective. Welcome everyone, Political Consciousness, Slick Pablo Vic. I am your DJ tonight. We have a great lineup for you, great topics to speak about, and I want you to introduce our guest tonight, James King, the man at the sports crib, the reason we have this show, the reason you guys get to hear us so often. James, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing all right.
Glad to have you here, man, as always. And another dear friend who's so close to my heart. I will go to war with this guy. I will do whatever it takes to keep him in my life. Sean Hartnett, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on here again.
No worries, man. You know, let me just say something. I'm kind of tipsy tonight, and that's all right. I appreciate having y'all in my life and y'all supporting me and even giving me the time of day to speak to y'all and taking time out of your lives to speak with me. That means a lot. So thank you both to James and Sean for being here, and to all our guests, Josh when he's here with us, and to anyone who may call in. Thank you guys for taking your time to spend with us, and we really appreciate y'all, because that's what it's all about, is just communication. Every problem in this world can be solved with good communication, and that's what we're striving for here at PC with Slick Pablo Vic. So thank you for having us. Got a lot of topics to talk about tonight. We dropped a giant mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. We got a Pepsi commercial that pissed a lot of people off. We got United Airlines, who is also pissing a lot of people off. And really what it comes down to is political correctness. Can we be politically correct? Can we do the right things? Can we say the right things at the right time? We'll get into all that, but first let me start with this. Sean, we dropped a bomb that cost over $300 million to develop. We don't have any details about how many people it affected. We don't know anything about the results of it, the strategic plan behind it. All we know is that this is the strongest bomb used since we dropped the atomic bomb, and we spent over $300 million on it. So my question to you, Sean, my good friend, is if we're keeping America first, how are we spending more money than it takes to fix the Flint water system, which could maybe take $100 million? We spend more money than that, triple-wise, on this bomb, mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. Is that keeping America first, or is all this bomb dropping a sign of something different?
Well, first, it's very unfortunate, but I think it's not surprising. I mean, how much money do we spend on military and defense every year anyway? So, I mean, it's kind of, that's where we're putting our money. What do you think is going to happen in the long run, you know? It's the biggest business for the United States is what we spend our money on. It's a lot of people work in it. And it's sad, but I'm not going to say I'm surprised, no.
James, anything from you? I mean, we made a big deal because they dropped 59 Tomahawk missiles after the chemical attacks used by Assad in Syria. We dropped, you know, almost $90 million in Tomahawk cruise missiles there. But this mother of all bombs, I feel like it was less reported on, less people gave a care about it. But $300 million, I mean, that's a lot of money. $300 million, think about it. There's so many things we could do with that much money. James, do you see anything wrong with this? Are you okay with it? How do you feel about this?
But see, you know, you're talking about the cost of the bomb. What about the logistics that it took to send the bomb over there? You know, the airplane, the crew, the people that so-called planned it. What people don't, maybe a lot of people don't realize, you know, like, there's got to be somewhere there's a little guy is pointing a little red, dot on the target. You know, it's a lot more than $300 million. But, this is what Trump promised. He said that he would, as a matter of fact, we might be lucky that he found this bomb. Otherwise it might have been a nuke. We found out that the Tomahawk missiles were, because Ivanka got upset seeing the babies. So he had to go one up on her. If he dropped 59 missiles over there, then he has to do something to one up, because that's his mentality, to show that he's a strong man. It's kind of like seeing it's a pissing contest, Trump against the world. He didn't bother to ask anyone if he could drop this bomb or anything, and weapons of mass destruction, which is what this is. These things are supposed to be sanctioned by Congress or someone. This isn't just an arbitrary thing. I don't understand why anyone is surprised. Like I said, this is what the man promised. This is what he's delivering, and it all diverts, the spotlight away from all his lawsuits, away from what happened with the Supreme Court. We're diverted from those things. So, it served its purpose in two ways.
And you're right about that, James. And, Sean, I want to come to you with this. James brings up a really good point about the use of force. And we see a couple things. One, we all saw 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles dropped on Syria after the chemical attack used by Assad. Another thing we saw were 18 allied soldiers who were killed by us when we misdirected one of our missiles and killed our own allies. And now this mother of all bombs, this 11,000-ton bomb, that's the largest and most powerful bomb we've used since the atomic bomb. Sean, should a president have the unilateral ability to display and deploy this type of warlike machinery, or should they try to get the congressional approval that's required in the Constitution? Or do you think that desperate times, special circumstances require more unilateral and authoritative positions? What do you think about that, Sean?
I'm of the opinion that they should have to go through Congress. However, I'm not going to really bash Trump on this topic because it's been a general standard that presidents have that power and they use it. I mean, if you go back in history and look at how many presidents have done it, I think you'd realize it's a pretty more common thing. I mean, so I'm not going to bash Trump on here about whether he did or whether he didn't do it. The thing that just rings through with me, I heard Trump say today, or it was yesterday, he said that he was talking about how America, with their military and their technology and their resources, is far more advanced than anybody else in the world. And that goes back to what I was saying about the money that's spent on it. We have these advancements. We have this ability. Whenever we were talking about how he dropped the bomb and the cruise missiles, like James said, there's a guy with a red dot. There's planes, there's boats, there's fleets, there's thousands and thousands of people. Like, go in and affect these orders. So with all these resources and technology, I don't know why we're not using that to, say, help out more. I mean, we have an amazing ability to do that. Why we're not doing it? That's what I'm more interested in. They're going to use the resources that they have. He's going to drop the bombs that he developed. That's why they pay to develop them. They're not just going to build them and look at them. Is it unfortunate? Yeah. Do I think he did anything that's so wrong that's never been done before? Not really, honestly.
Sean, excuse me, one minute. I got to kind of disagree with you because even Nixon before, Operation Rolling Thunder, he went to Congress with that. And when you think back, even Bush and the boys, even they went in front of Congress. This is the first president, I think, since maybe Eisenhower, that has taken it unilaterally just to drop a bomb when he felt ready. As much as we hated what he was doing, in Vietnam, we knew that he had the backing of Congress, and up until a certain point, we felt that Congress had our back. In this case, we don't even know if he protected the people out in the field. You mentioned, Vic, he killed 18 people with a Tomahawk missile. Friendly fire is something that, people on the ground have always, it's something that has terrified the boots on the ground. But, to have it happen with a missile, is very irresponsible.
I want to say I understand, and I know what you mean when you say that presidents have gone to Congress, but most of them go to Congress post doing some type of military action, and then they go to Congress to get a declaration of war or to get further approval. But I mean, I think if you go back and look at every president, they would have had some type of military action that was not sanctioned by Congress. But since they're the commander-in-chief, they were allowed to. And a big one that rings true for me was Reagan in Nicaragua. I mean, he caught a lot of flack for that. But then he was able to come out and say, helping America fighting communism, et cetera. And that's how he did that. I mean, if you look anywhere in South America, military action being approved by just the president and Congress not going through with it, it's amazing how much we've done.
And you're right about that. Sean. And we can't necessarily say it's for the best either, though. We can't say that.
No. I'm not. I just said I don't want to bash
I think
Trump
we all agree
because
on
I just don't want to say Trump shouldn't have done it because X, Y, and Z. It's people do it and it's unfortunate, but I mean, we need to stop it and for the rest of the presidents, because I think it's a trend now that they can do a certain amount and then they have to go to Congress. Sure. But all presidents have gotten away with it to a certain extent.
And is it true? We got Josh McCorder here. Josh, are you here?
I guess he had to leave. He was here for a minute, but, wait a minute. Is this Josh an 843 number?
Yeah, Josh is an 843 number.
All right, this might be Josh here.
Let's see.
What
Josh,
up?
Are you?
What's happening?
That's our boy right there. Josh, how you doing today? This is Josh McCorder, a good friend of ours, also College of Charleston alum. How are you doing today, Josh?
I am excited to be with y'all. I'm just happy to be out of the office and on the phone.
Good. So we were talking a little bit about Donald Trump taking unilateral action to do things like send 59 Tomahawk missiles to Syria, to kill 18 of our own allied soldiers, and to also drop this mother of all bombs, which cost $300 million in Afghanistan, on a cave. We don't even know what happened because of that. What do you think about unilateral force used by the president, or do you think they need to go to Congress Sean, James, and I had a pretty good discussion about that, but I want to know where you stand. Do you think that the president needs to get congressional approval to do such military actions?
And to be honest, this is kind of one of those fuzzy areas that really came up when Vietnam occurred. You know, we went.
Hey, well, let's get off Bluetooth. Make this a little better here.
Yeah, but with Vietnam, that was never officially a war. For example, a lot of people don't realize that it was strictly a conflict. There was never a declaration of war, and that was one of the ways that they went about it. I can't recall exactly how they were able to circumvent that, but when we apply these checks and balances, the first thing that people in positions of power or people who aspire to be in a position of power and strength, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to try and find their way to break the system. That's one of the things that Donald Trump was known for. His father was well known as sort of someone that would find the smallest loophole, stretch it out as wide as he can, and step on through it. And that's what you were going to see with Trump. And we're going to talk about whether or not he should be doing things and he shouldn't. I have very mixed feelings. When I try and take away from the fact that this is Donald Trump making the decisions, it definitely makes it not seem terrible. And I think that's something that we need to ask ourselves as well. Are we letting our prejudice for the individual overshadow our overall state? I'll be honest with y'all. I haven't really been able to come to a clear conclusion on the issue. I definitely, when it comes to the mother of all bombs, that was asinine. I don't care if the Pentagon says it wasn't in retaliation. The fact that the Pentagon went out of their way to say that's more than enough to kind of tell you that it was retaliation. $300 million bomb, and however much money that the 59 missiles ended up costing. You want to tell me all that, but then you want to tell me that we can't fund Meals on Wheels. You want to tell me that we got to pay, for a border. There's no consistency, and the what's going to end up, and in the end, what's going to fix this whole situation, in my opinion, is people being educated. And once they get educated, then we can sit there, we can accurately engage on the debate of, okay, this is why the president can't take unilateral action. Or this is why these are situations where he's able to. It is a crapshoot, guys. Usually I'm very strong in my convictions. This is one where I've really kind of stepped back and had to ask myself, with different circumstances, would I feel differently about it? And unfortunately, I do.
I just want to ask you, Josh, would you have felt the same way or the same, kind of indifference if Obama had done the same thing?
See, that's where it gets a little hazy. Obama did go to Congress and asked, and they said no. And if he had, I think that's the issue that people are just casually glossing over, where, again, it's yet another example of the double standard that's applied. It's unfortunate, because at this point, if anyone's denying it's a skin game issue, we can't have a rational conversation with that. That's just the facts on that. If Obama had just dropped it himself, without going to Congress, I would have definitely felt some type of way about it. I definitely feel some type of way about Trump doing it, but if Trump went to Congress first, I don't know if I would, be as open to it as I would be with Obama. And I think that more so has to do with the state of the Congress as it is right now. Unfortunate at this level. I can't trust the legislative or the executive.
I'm not just talking about, dropping the bomb. I'm talking about, taking it away from Meals on Wheels and the whole cutting veterans benefits.
I would still be very upset. I'm a I don't like, you know, I hate using this phrase because, you know, as soon as we use these phrases, we follow up with exactly what we hate. I hate using labels, but if I had to label myself, I think I would try to label myself as a progressive moderate. And if Obama had come in there and said, you know, we got to cut Meals on Wheels, it's not working. I mean, if he came in and said the same bald-faced lies, then yeah, that's an issue. By the way, on the subject of lies, not sure if James, if you heard about this, but I think Vic, you might have heard about it. One of our state representatives, Joe Wilson, who yelled out at Obama, "You lie," got to have that yelled at him several times last
yep.
week when he had himself a town hall. So
yeah,
oh, it felt so good to hear that.
Well, let me pose this to you guys, okay? Let me pose this to you guys. 300 million dollars. It's not a figure you just kind of gloss over, okay? When people are giving Bernie Sanders a lot of shit for his free college plan, and now that we see New York is actually implementing this free college tuition plan. Let's talk about this a little bit, okay? Education, we all know, is crucial to solving every issue we even have in this world. So many problems could be solved by education. Mm-hmm. We are all so lucky to have gotten some kind of education in our lives, and a lot of people in the world don't get that opportunity. What do you guys think about New York saying, okay, we will give New York residents free college tuition if they promise to work in the state after they graduate? And I'll come to you, Sean, first with this. What do you think about that? Do you think we're doing something progressive that's for the greater good, or do you think we're opening a dangerous door and maybe diminishing the value of a college degree even more so than it already has, you know, gone down? What do you think about that, Sean?
Well, I mean, first, I think it's great. If they can fiscally manage to give people free tuition, that makes sense. And then if they want you to come and work for the state, that's fine too. I mean, it's like the military used to do that. You go, you do your time in the military, and they pay for school for you. So, I mean, I kind of, if they can make it work, kudos. That's awesome. But I think it's diminishing the value of a college degree. I mean, how many times do you hear people say, "I got a four-year degree that's not worth anything"? I mean, it's I don't know. That's a hard question, but I don't think it's diminishing it. No, I don't think that's fair. I think if the value of a four-year degree is diminishing, that's just happening across all of our whole society. And they found a way to, well, you know, it's the next best thing. Let's help people get it. I'm cool with that.
It's yeah, and I agree with you. I agree with you there. Josh, you got any thoughts about New York saying that kids can go to college for free?
Is Josh gone?
Josh still with us, boss?
Can you hear me?
A little bit now. Are you all right?
How about, let me move real quick, see if y'all can hear me now. Better?
Okay, right there. You're good.
Boom. Perfect. So I've got a couple, you know, different, I guess, I've got a couple different outlooks on it, to be honest. I think on the surface level, the gesture, the grand idea of it all, I love it. That I will be behind that 100% every day, all day. I love the idea that higher education should be a right, not a privilege. I feel the same way about, you know, education as I do medicine. It should be, you know, a right, not a privilege. However, you know, when you start to look at the details of the of what they're doing,
a little bit of pause is that I'm not sure if any of y'all gotten to the finer details of who qualifies for it, but it's for families that make under $100,000 a year. Now, for those of us in South Carolina or other areas where, you know, maybe the cost of living isn't as high, that, you know, that's very, very, you know, a lot of people don't make that much. But in the end, New York is a bit of a different story. homeless people in New York make $75,000 a year. So I want to see how it's going to actually be executed with the current implementation. I think that would go a long way in really showing how it's going to work. But I think another thing that Americans just kind of gloss over, whether or not it's because particular politicians want them to or not, is that it's not like this hasn't been done before. There are other countries that do this. You know, there are other countries that give their, you know, young people a higher education. It's not like we're starting from scratch and that we don't know what we can do. We have a model. It's just a matter of getting past, maybe it's American existentialism. I don't know if that's one of the reasons. You know, oh, USA is number one. We're not going to take anything from any other country except their people. You know, I really, really want to see how this is executed. I've got high hopes for it.
I agree. I think any step in the right direction is a plus.
Anything that has to do with more education is always a good thing. I think we all agree on that. My question, I mean, I'm really, you know, it's just stupid that New York, of all places, is the first state to implement something like this. I mean, we really need it in places like the South, in South Carolina, where Josh and I are, even in North Carolina, where you're at. We could all use more education. Every state could use more education.
Mm-hmm.
I hope New York really paves the way for that. James, you got any thoughts on this? Free education, higher education for these people in New York? What do you think about it, James?
Well, you know, I'm the same vein as you guys. I mean, you know, it was the city of San Francisco, you know, I mean, they have their program. So, you know, it's, you know, things in New York, I mean, you would have thought that they would have been, you know, one of the first states to implement it. But, you know, I'd like to go back to the question of, you know, a lot of people having, you know, degrees that don't mean anything. Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, to me, you know, and I know, you know, when I came home from Vietnam, it was a little bit different. You know, we had to more or less mold our future around our education, you know, because, you know, it was free, but you still had to live afterwards. You know, nowadays, you know, you see guys, you know, because they got a camera, you know, on their Christmas or their birthday, they think that they're supposed to go now and all of a sudden be a professional photographer, you know, or a guy, you know, thinks that he's going to be a football player. All of a sudden he's, you know, majoring in basket weaving. So you can't, you know, you can't really blame it on the system, because to me, a man is still responsible for his choices. Now, you know, I could go through the projects in Cleveland where my sister lives, and I could sit on the corner with a whole stack of scholarships, and I would venture to say at the end of the day, there would be probably 10, maybe 25% of them gone. And then out of that 10% that was gone, maybe 15% will fill them out, and then maybe 3% will turn them in. So, and that's because they have no hope. So you have to give people education in order to give them hope. Otherwise, they'll feel like they're stuck. And there's nowhere to go, and that you know, it doesn't depend on how much education you offer them. You have to show them what the education is going to do for them.
That's a valid point. Correct. Yeah, that's 1,000% correct, James, and you're absolutely right. And it really reminds me of the analogy I brought up a couple of weeks ago about education, where the students who I saw at the elementary school, they were given iPads, but they didn't have any background knowledge or ability to analyze what they were reading on the internet. So, yeah, you're giving them opportunity or access, but are we giving the context, the background, the foresight to actually analyze these problems? Are we putting value and dedication into education the way we should be? I don't think we are. I wish we were.
I agree.
I really do, because if you look around the world, we're importing people to do math and science into America. And Josh, you might be able to enlighten us on this. I mean, how much do we look outside when we go to technological issues?
In terms of the H-1B-1 visa, I heard an insane statistic that it was like over 30-40% of current PhDs that are teaching or employed at universities are on the H-1B-1 visa. I don't know the accuracy to that, but it wouldn't surprise me. So that's, you know, we're taking the best and brightest minds from their homes and, you know, bringing them here to benefit. And in regards to also, you know, just in general outsourcing, that's another one of those subjects where it's kind of, I can see both sides of it. So it's really difficult for me to really dig on that. But one thing I would like to touch on, James, you brought up a really good point earlier about worthless degrees and people having to be responsible for their choices. I literally, at the time, it couldn't have been better for you to mention that, because I literally today, about a couple hours ago, was you know, catching up on some news articles, came across a little basic BuzzFeed type article about the differences from between Europe, like America, and the rest of the world. And one of the things on there, I think it was actually number 10 or whatever it was on the list, a lot of Europeans are just mind blown that we can get soda for so cheap and we get free refills. Their question is, why are you allowed to purchase something that's bad for you, and why are you allowed to get it in excess? Well, you know, I can definitely understand that there. So, you know, why are we offering people, you know, these bullets for themselves, basically? But at the same time, we have to respect people's choices. If a person wants to make that choice to drink a bunch of soda, rot their teeth out, and all the other, you know, terrible things that'll happen just from chugging it all day, then, you know, yeah, they're gonna live by their choices. But I also think that there has to be some responsibility with the college, because if the college is offering a major such as basket weaving, the college is knowingly offering a faulty product. They're offering a degree in basket weaving. And the entire purpose to get a degree is not to educate yourself further. You can do certifications for that. You can just go audit a class if that's what you want to do. But you're going for a degree. You're going for that key to that door of opportunity. And if you're going and you think, and hey, who are we to judge if there really is somebody who's like a basket weaving prodigy? I want that person weaving baskets. If that makes them happy and they're good at it, damn it, weave them baskets. But I also believe that it's not only is it as much our responsibility to, you know, make sure that we make educated choices that are going to benefit us in the long run, but I also believe that the college has to be held accountable as well. It's a two-way street. Both people, you know, both parties are doing wrong here. We've got one party that's knowingly offering a subpar product that's not going to perform as advertised, and then you have other people who, instead of educating themselves on the matter, are just taking the bait. I'm not sure how the rest. I would love to hear how you guys feel about that. I don't know how much I would hold universities responsible, but I definitely think that there's a question of ethics involved in that.
And before I pass this question on to Sean and James, let me interject and give some policy background on this. There are a lot of questions about the cost of education and the result and the return of investment on such things. And there's a thing that Barack Obama was trying to enforce called the gainful employment rule, which would, in essence, gauge the amount of money graduates made after attaining their degree, and then use those results to determine whether or not those colleges would get accreditation or not. That's a very strict and liberal policy that, you know, people like Elizabeth Warren and such are willing to enforce. And crack down and cut funding on institutions or even remove certification on institutions that don't fit the parameters of this gainful employment rule. And one of the problems I have with this rule is they look at statistics like how much money you make in the first 2 years of graduation. And I don't really think that's a valid articulation or display of a person's worth or success looking at the first 2 years after graduation. So, Sean, what do you think about Josh's points as well as his gainful employment rule? And also, you have a specific perspective from living in Europe. How do they look at the American education system as well?
Well, as far as how do Europeans look at the American education system, they don't understand how anybody can go to university and get a degree because it's so expensive, at least in Spain. But like when I told them how much a year of in-state public school costs and then how much out-of-state, and then if you go to private school, they're like, what? They couldn't they couldn't believe it. They don't understand why education is so expensive. As far as holding a college accountable, like Josh was talking about, I don't know. I do think there's an issue with these these easy degrees, or I take big issue with, like, in North Carolina, for example, UNC Chapel Hill got in a lot of trouble because their athletes weren't actually having to do the work to earn the degree. I think the whole thing is just showing that the idea of what is a four-year degree and what's it worth and what you can do with it is changing, and I think we just need to figure out what we're going to do and draw some lines and really, draw some lines and make some kind of policies about this is what needs to happen and this is what a four-year degree is supposed to get you. But I think the understanding of that has kind of shifted and blurred.
James, do you have any thoughts on this?
My thoughts, you know, on this are kind of, you know, very old school in the sense of this has been happening for so long, and people have been you know, this has almost been a subject more since the Civil Rights Act was passed, I think, than anything else. You know, is about what does an education mean, you know, or what does a degree mean, you know, if you can't, you know, turn that into some type of monetary income. To first talk about your thing, Rick, about, you know, I don't think it should be based on the first 2 years, or possibly even the first 4 years, because, you know, you have to also account in here the student loans that, you know, the person is going to be paying, you know, during those first, you know, 4 to 6 years, you know, after you're out of school. So unless you're going to factor that, you know, into the equation also, then, you know, I think that needs to, you know, be addressed. But as far as Europe, you know, it's carried since I've been in Europe. I mean, the same, it was the same argument then, you know, how can Americans afford to, you know, go to school and things like that. But you know, the thing of it is, you know, like, in Spain or Italy, I mean, you know, a degree of, you know, tending olive trees or, you know, making baskets. I mean, you know, those are things that you know, you pass down within the family, you know. So, I mean, you know, that's like a trade. Instead of a home school, that's where a lot of the trades are perpetuated. And that's the, you know, that's what that, of course, I mean, you know, it might put the family in a niche, where they could only make so much money, but at least, you know, their amount of education equates to their occupation or family tradition, which is something that we can't say too much here in America, because things change at such a rapid pace. You know, my grandfather and whatnot, I mean, you know, they depended upon steel mills. You know, now my nephew, you know, and people, you know, they're in the automobile industry. They're making harnesses for cars and things like that. I mean, you know, they still wouldn't know how to hook it up, but they're making them, and they're making a decent wage. The guy over top of them, he might have a master's degree. He might have a PhD. No longer does he have a bachelor's degree. The guys that are putting the wires together are the ones that have the bachelor's degree. So basically, you know, their education is worthless also. And like I said, I think that's the reason why we have to address the root of the problem instead of just throwing money at what happens at the end of the problem.
And I agree with you 1,000% there, James. You're absolutely correct. And we're wrapping up here, last couple minutes of the show. I want to give everyone a little bit of time to talk about whatever subject they think is appropriate. So I'll give you guys each, you know, about a minute or so to talk about whatever you guys want. And let me start. I'm seeing this video of the poor gentleman, the doctor, I should say, who was aboard on the United Airlines flight, and the way he was treated. And, you know, seeing a American bleeding out the mouth after being comfortably seated in his own airplane seat with a ticket that he paid for full price to get to his destination, and seeing him removed the way he was, treated the way he was, and then for, you know, the leaders and the figureheads of United Airlines to be so disrespectful, even in their statements afterwards. And then seeing things like what happened with the Pepsi commercial, you know. Pepsi is trying to make a statement, and they bring in Kendall Jenner to be their figurehead to, I don't know, I guess battle racial and societal prejudices as well as police brutality. I mean, it's all kind of ridiculous. But at the end of the day, it makes me laugh. It's kind of freaking hilarious because it ends up in the best memes. We're talking about it all day on social media. It just makes me literally laugh out loud seeing corporations like Pepsi fail, seeing United Airlines fail, seeing a guy like Sean Spicer, who's a freaking moron, let's just be honest about it, this guy's a freaking moron, saying things like Hitler didn't stoop low enough to use chemical weapons. I mean, we are living in a comic strip or something right now. It's a freaking joke. Everything that is revolving around us and that we have to, you know, we are subject to airplanes and the president and corporations. I mean, these are things that are in our everyday lives. It's just funny to see these things fail so ultimately. So that's my little rant. I want to give you all a little bit of time real quick. Josh, any final thoughts on the night?
Yes, sir, actually. Shout-outs to Gwinnett County, Georgia, and their garbage police force. Not sure if y'all heard in the news. A gentleman was pulled over, only 21 years old, was pulled over. An officer who, a sergeant, had 19 years experience on the force, claimed that he had been swerving, that he hadn't been staying in his lane, and that when he got to the car, he smelled marijuana, and then that he told the young man to get out of the vehicle, and he said that the young man became erratic and lunged for his cell phone and started saying he needed to call his mother. Then he said that the young man had pushed him away and tried to turn away from him to resist arrest, and that as and because of that, he had to take him down, tase him. And then after, and what he didn't mention, by the way, is that when he got the gentleman out of the vehicle who had his hands up showing that he was unarmed, he held, was holding on to the man's left wrist with his right hand. The man turned his hand. You know, it's a natural reaction. Any child whose wrist you grab, the natural reaction is to pull it back. The young man just turned his hand. He didn't snatch it back. He just kind of turned his wrist and just kind of pulled his hand back. It wasn't a snatch. Wasn't anything. Wasn't a sudden movement. The moment that the officer's grip broke on the hand, he punched him. Just punched him square in the face, threw him down, tased him. While he was handcuffed, another officer who had been trained by this sergeant comes running onto the scene and stomps on the man's head. Then they proceed to, one of them proceeded to lie about it in the police report, and the other one said, and the other one turned the other one in. The sergeant, the only reason that he was fired was because another cell phone video from another angle caught the initial stop of when he punched the young man. This is absurd. I don't know about y'all. My father was a police officer, and so I get a lot of people who misinterpret a lot of the basis for a lot of my anti-police brutality rhetoric, because I'm coming from the position of someone whose father's life was in danger every time they went out. And because of fuckboy officers like that, they endangered his life. I am sick and tired of this good old boy locker room mentality. It has done nothing for nobody. That has gone the ways of West Virginia towns that are now in you know, heroin and meth, you know, epidemics. It's no longer functional. This has got to stop. Officers are held to a higher standard because they are expected to be that standard. It is, and when the sergeant was confronted by the chief afterwards, hey, you didn't mention anything about punching that guy in the head. Why didn't you tell us about that? His response was, it's different in the streets. Both of these officers have been fired, and they are both going to have charges brought against them. I will give credit to Gwinnett County on that, but you know what? I will also tell Gwinnett County that that has been a long-going problem. And I just, we've already gone through the police brutality. You know, we went through the big year of where everyone was saying, oh, we got to do something about it, and nothing has happened. Nothing has truly happened. And I think it's about time that people stop forgetting what happened simply because, you know, the news falls in love with another war. We got to hold these officers accountable just like we hold everybody else accountable.
Absolutely, 1,000% correct, Josh, and I appreciate you bringing that to light. And I'm sorry for running a little bit over, but I do want to get everyone's final thoughts. And Sean, any final thoughts tonight?
I think I've agreed with a lot of what y'all said. Times are crazy, and it's all going to get better. I want to stay positive is all I have to say. We're going to learn from our mistakes, and we're going to improve. We can only get up. We can't. Hopefully, we won't make ourselves worse.
I love that, Sean. Thank you for that. James, anything you want to add?
There's a couple of things I want to add. Fortunately, the show is coming to an end, and I can't keep I can't keep it that long. But I could spend the next hour. First of all, I want to commend you guys admitting that there's a problem. If you had been in New York doing Giuliani and stop and frisk, you would not be appalled by this. This was just another weekend obstacle that you had to go through, whether you were Hispanic or possibly gay, LGBTQ, whatever it is now, you were subject to things like this. When you speak about the meth and heroin epidemics, you have to remember that these things weren't talked about or really at the forefront when they were happening to minorities. It was a different ball game. Now, you know, that they're happening to the majority, quote, unquote, you know, it's become a problem. Well, you know, in my hood, it's been a problem for the last 40 years. I've been singing We Shall Overcome, you know, while swinging a baseball bat for the last 50 years. So, you know, I'm just glad to see, you know, that young guys like you are interested in what's happening now, and you're just not willing to accept the norm, and you're willing to change it.
And that's what this is about. This is why we get up once a week to talk, sometimes a little bit over 45 minutes, but that's okay. This is why we speak to one another, just to let everyone know that there is hope out there. And even if these recordings are buried in time and 1,000 years from now, people bear, you know, dig this up, let it be known that we are people who believe in equality, we believe in peace, and we believe in knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And with that, I appreciate Sean, Josh, James. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you all for listening. I know we ran a little bit over, but when you talk about such important things, it's okay to take a little bit of time doing so. I hope everyone has a great weekend. I hope everyone is here to join us next week. Thank you all to my guests who spoke with us. Thank you all to everyone who listened, and thank everyone who's just here in this world trying to do the right thing. That's what we're all trying to do, and I'm just smiling here, thinking about you guys and thinking about how wonderful you guys are, how wonderful your significant others are, how wonderful your lives are, because that gives me hope as well. So everybody out there, stay positive, keep it up, and keep smiling. I'll see you guys next week, and thank you all for being here with us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Come on, spit on this. Yo. Yeah. Yeah.